The markets. We just can't get enough of them.
Markets are the drivers of your wealth and investment strategy.
Welcome to Magic Markets with your co-hosts, the Finance Ghost and Mohammed Nallah.
Together, we have more than 25 years of combined experience in the markets.
For those looking to take their market and business knowledge to the next level, we offer Magic Markets Premium, a research report and podcast library that nearly has 100 reports in it and a new one every week, all available for just 99 Rand a month. Recent reports have included the likes of Kroger, Deere & Co., Foot Locker, McDonald's, UPS, Apple, Meta, Johnson & Johnson and Swatch. With broad variety and deep research, this is perfect for anyone looking to go to the next level. We invite you to join us in Magic Markets Premium. Go to magic-markets.com to subscribe. Welcome to episode 166 of Magic Markets, and we've got such a cool theme today, Mo. I loved it when you suggested it, which was this concept of chips are the new oil. Like, I do enjoy some oily chips, usually on a Friday night and often on a Saturday as well with my burger. This is obviously something a little bit different. I took the oil side of things. I did Saudi Aramco, and you took a chips business, but not NVIDIA, before everyone assumes it's that one.
Yeah, indeed. Chips are the new oil, right? We've spoken about Taiwan Semiconductor, something we'd covered previously in Magic Markets Premium. NVIDIA has been all over the news, but Broadcom, that's a stock that doesn't really get as much coverage, I think, just because NVIDIA has been so crazy. And I had to have a laugh because Broadcom's stock code is AVGO. And I had a look at that and I said, we've got to have a go, right? So AVGO, have a go. Broadcom, it's why I'm covering Broadcom. But it's also, there's another reason, Ghost. I mean, Broadcom, and I won't get into the detail now. I want you to go first with Saudi Aramco. But Broadcom, when you had a look at the results, looked decent, but disappointed the markets. And in contrast to what we've seen out of NVIDIA. So that was why it was interesting for me. I was curious to go and dig a little bit and find out what was the actual disappointment. But you have a go first with the oil. You first have to heat up the oil and then you throw the chips in, right?
Yeah, look, I've got no cool stories for you about the stock ticker here, Saudi Aramco. The ticker is 2222. So it sounds like one of those Dubai fancy number plates. And obviously Dubai and Saudi Arabia, not the same place, but certainly funded by oil money. So if you go and read the Aramco stuff, firstly, it's not really a call transcript kind of environment. It's more like they just release their financials into the world and you go and read them and that's what you get. So they talk about upstream preeminence and downstream integration. Sounds very fancy. That's basically how they describe their business over there at Aramco. They are clearly about a lot more than just sponsoring very flashy F1 races. So this is obviously coming off the back of the Grand Prix this past weekend. And it is one of the world's lowest cost producers. They have a very large reserves base. They have operational flexibility. And on top of all of that, they've got domestic and international wholly owned and affiliated refineries to actually monetize that upstream production. So vertically integrated, that's an important point here. And they are certainly not slowing down. So they're pretty much in the middle of their largest capital investment program in company history. They invested $42.2 billion in the business in 2023. That's a lot. That's an increase of 12.1% from the previous year. And they expect it to keep going for a couple more years because what they are doing is investing in their crude oil production to achieve maximum sustainable capacity, or MSC, in line with what the Saudi government has told them to do. So, you know, Saudi Arabia depends on this stuff, and you basically cannot separate the Saudi state from Aramco. I mean, that is just the reality here. And the investment is not just on the upstream production side. So this is something that I found quite interesting. In 2023, they advanced their liquid to chemical strategy by going off and acquiring Valvoline. So that's a name that you might know if you watch a bit of motorsport. Valvoline Inc.'s global products business. They also acquired 10% in a petrochemical business in China. Sadly, no Hail Mary offer came in for Sasol. So I have no exciting news for those shareholders. But I mean, those are the sorts of businesses that Aramco seems to be buying. So maybe if Sasol gets cheap enough, you never know. Aramco also entered the liquefied natural gas market through acquiring a strategic minority stake in a business called MidOcean Energy. Basically, they are not shy to step outside of oil in search of long-term growth, and they actually aren't shy to go and buy retail outlets either, like Esmax in Chile that they acquired 100% in. They also bought 40% in Gas and Oil Pakistan, which is a retail and storage company in, obviously, Pakistan. So yeah, I mean, it's just an absolute monster, was the point I really wanted to get across. This is so much more than just oil fields in Saudi Arabia. They really own a lot of stuff.
I mean, whenever you look at Aramco, it's just, as you indicated, it's this absolute behemoth. It's a monster. They're so big. The scale of everything, I'm sure you're going to touch on, I think there's a big dividend that comes through from Aramco up to the Saudi treasury as well. I mean, it spits money. I think it's important because, you know, if you have a look at this world that we've just gone through over the last 2 years and ESG and clean and, you know, move away from fossil fuels, this basically, you know, throws all of that out and says, look, we're about generating energy. Energy is what's important. And we're going to try and do that as profitably on a sustainable basis as possible. I mean, truly awe-inspiring. I'm keen to hear the rest of your talking points, but I do want to also talk about Broadcom, right? So a lot of people might not know Broadcom. So people know NVIDIA. Everyone knows NVIDIA makes the cool graphics cards and they make the cool chips that power AI. But what does Broadcom actually do? And so I want to start off there. Because Broadcom is a company, and again, you know, if where do they specialize? They've been very big in the data center space, which is obviously important in a world of big data. It's important in the world of cloud computing. And they operate both in terms of not just helping operate the data centers and so forth. They've got the tech behind that. So they actually build the tech, they build the semiconductors, and then they also have software businesses that are attached to that. So in aggregate, they play across both verticals. They're not just a semiconductor manufacturer, but they're also a player that has some software that some players use in that space. Now, they're not alone. We know that the semiconductor space has been very crowded. So I just want to maybe touch on who some of the big competitors are. And again, you're going to recognize some of these names. You know, you're going to recognize Intel. You're going to recognize a company called NXP Semiconductors, maybe. I think that's a company that's really focused on the automotive and industrial applications. Then NVIDIA, you know, obviously NVIDIA, as we've indicated, GPUs, that's graphical, you know, graphical processing units, the AI chips. NVIDIA has really been the darling of the sector. Then a company, as I indicated, we covered here in Magic Markets Premium, Taiwan Semiconductor. And remember, Taiwan Semiconductor, when we had a look at that company, they operate, you know, effectively across the entire value chain. They were really generating the low tech chips that were going into your toaster, and then also the very high tech stuff that was going into your iPhone. So why I highlight this is because companies can choose specific verticals, or they can say, okay, great, if we are a semiconductor manufacturer, they can still go across the entire spectrum from the low tech all the way up to the high tech stuff. And like I say, you know, a couple of other players will have a look at the performance of all of that as my last talking point. The point I want to land on here is that Broadcom has been in an interesting and exciting space. They also recently acquired a company called VMware. Now, some of you might know this firm. It was one of those stocks that if you follow the sector closely, very volatile, slightly smaller. I say slightly smaller. The deal was $69 billion. That was the size of the acquisition of VMware by Broadcom. It was pending Chinese approval, but that was all wrapped up at the end of last year. So it's still recent. It's hot off the press and actually contributed quite nicely to the top line results. And I'll cover some of that. But what I want to highlight is that deal was done partly in cash, partly in stock, really designed to maintain the fact that Broadcom shareholders were expected to own roughly around 88% of the combined entity at the end of it. VMware shareholders were going to get around 12% of the combined company. It didn't really end up exactly there because they had to bump up the price. But that deal really was quite exciting, the market liking it. And effectively, like I say, contributing to some of the solid numbers that I will discuss in my next talking point, Ghost.
Yeah, well, speaking of solid numbers, you know, there's a lot of acquisitive activity clearly at Aramco. And there's also a lot of cash literally just being pumped out of the desert. For the year ended December 2023, Aramco achieved its second highest ever annual profits. Net income, $121.3 billion. Free cash flow, $101.2 billion. So, I mean, not only do they make a fortune, but it really does come out the other side as cash. I mean, it's amazing, right? I can understand stuff like LIV Golf and the F1, and I don't know what to do with the money. So, return on average capital employed, 22.5%. That's also, you know, very high. That's really good. They paid base dividends of $78 billion in 2023. That's up 4% year on year. Now, they also paid performance dividends of $19.8 billion in 2023, taking the total dividend to $97.8 billion, very close to the free cash flow number, and also 30.4% higher than what they paid in 2022. So interesting lesson here in terms of how they manage what they call this base dividend. You know, remember, this is very much a cyclical business. Profits rise and fall based on the oil price. So they've kind of got this baseline dividend that you can be pretty sure is coming. And then they pay performance dividends based on how well the year actually went. And the performance dividend is expected to be between 50% and 70% of the group's annual cash flow in 2024. They are also not shy to use scrip dividends, which means they get more retained earnings out of the company without further cash leaving the balance sheet. So Aramco is really just the cash cow of the century.
Wow. I mean, that puts it into perspective. When I'm going to mention some of these numbers from Broadcom, they're going to seem trivial by comparison. But again, as you indicated, Aramco, probably one of the world's largest companies, incidentally, not by market capitalization. And that's also because it doesn't trade at the same kind of multiples that tech stocks trade at. But certainly from a revenue perspective, it's up there. Certainly from a dividend perspective, I mean, holy smoke, you're close on $100 billion. That is substantial. Let's jump into the numbers here with Broadcom. So this is a company that is quite successful. As we indicated, you know, chips are the new oil, and it's a fairly juicy industry. So if we just have a look at Broadcom, if you have a look at gross margins, they come through at around 74%. And then obviously you've got to drill that all the way down to a net income margin. There's a lot of R&D that comes through and so forth. So once you get down to the net income level, it's still a very respectable 39%. These are healthy margins. It's why the sector has been so hot, is these businesses make a lot of money, but they also are exhibiting substantial and strong growth. Now, that's probably why Broadcom disappointed the market. So let's jump into it. They released results last week. And first and foremost, on the adjusted earnings per share, that came through at around $10.99 for the first fiscal quarter. This is their first fiscal quarter for the next now reporting year, right? And this was actually better than the market expected. The market was expecting $10.40. They got $10.99. So that's a beat. Yes, a beat should mean the stock rallies. They also had revenue that came in at $11.96 billion, which was above expectations of $11.8 billion. That's also a beat. So yes, theoretically, the stock should rally. And the reason I highlight this is because we have to be so sensitive to expectations in the market and then also what happens with forward guidance. And this is where I think this falls flat. Is if you have a look at forward guidance, Broadcom's full year guidance came through at around $50 billion. Now, I would say roughly in line with the market's expectation at $49.8 billion, but the market almost expected more just because of what we've seen in the rest of the industry, with what you've seen in NVIDIA, the rapid growth that you've actually seen come through in the industry as a whole. I would think that the market was expecting that number to be a little bit higher, and that is why the market was disappointed. It was really on the forward guidance number. Now, I want to take a step back because I indicated how Broadcom operates in both semiconductor solutions manufacture as well as the software segment. So what does that split look like? Well, over the last quarter, you've got around $7.5 billion coming from the semiconductor manufacture, and you've got $4.5 billion coming through from the software side of the business. And this also helps explain why, if the market's really super hot around semiconductor manufacture and AI, and you look at NVIDIA's performance, it's part of the reason why a player like Broadcom might underperform. And that is because it's more diversified, it has a wider range of products, and yes, it's going to get the benefit of the semiconductor rally that's come through, but it's not getting the full 100% impetus of that theme that's really running quite hot in the market as compared to a player like NVIDIA, for example. Now, how is it compared over the course of the last 12 months? And again, this is maybe just a feeder into my very last talking point, but I want to touch on the point here, is over the last 12 months, Broadcom's been up 125%. So you can't really complain, right? It's not terrible. The iShares Semiconductor ETF over the same time period was up around 74%. So it has outperformed its peer group. It's just not NVIDIA. And it's almost unfair to compare it to the elephant in the room being NVIDIA, because on a standalone basis, Broadcom has really been a strong performer, both from the bottoms up as well as on the share price performance. And again, we'll touch on that share price performance as my last talking point goes.
So my last talking point really is, how on earth do you forecast what you're going to make out of Aramco, right? Because the oil price is the key here. There's a lot of money coming out of it right now, but what is going to happen in terms of renewable energy and this energy transition? Aramco's strength is in the fossil fuel of all fossil fuels, oil. That is as fossily as it gets. So much as European governments would just love it if everyone woke up tomorrow and drove an electric Volvo, our recent work on Toyota, and certainly my thinking all along, to be honest, is that hybrids are a far more likely route forward. There's just too much infrastructure designed to put petrol in a car. It's hard to believe that when you take into account emerging markets and everything else, that magically this will all just go away. What will this mean globally for oil demand? Well, of course, we can't be 100% sure because we just don't know what will happen in terms of hybrid versus, you know, pure internal combustion engine versus EV. What I will say is that China is a major factor from a macroeconomic standpoint for oil in general, and electric vehicles are proving to be very popular there. So don't ignore the EV risks completely. There are a lot of other factors here as well. And actually, Mo, this is really your area of expertise more than mine. It's stuff like OPEC Plus versus non-OPEC Plus production agreements and trends. It's Russian oil exports. That's another macroeconomic factor. It's geopolitical tensions in the Middle East that will go and affect the seaborne oil trade. Trying to forecast oil demand is an almost impossible task. Good luck. But what I will say is that if you want to take a view on the oil price, Sasol on the JSE is not the way to do it. Sasol's share price has decoupled from the oil price thanks to, frankly, poor infrastructure in South Africa. That's one reason. And their other problem is just, you know, the chemicals business is a big part of what they do. So it doesn't really give you this pure play on oil. Now, interestingly enough, I then went and looked at Saudi Aramco versus a Brent oil ETF, essentially, over the past year. And Saudi Aramco has well outperformed the Brent oil ETF. And I think that's the benefit, really, of just being an operating company rather than a commodity, because not only do they spit out dividends, but if they have a good year, operating margins can get better, etc., etc. It is a purer play on the oil price for sure, and you get a lot of other benefits as well, particularly at higher oil prices. Obviously, what happens is if oil prices do go lower, those benefits unwind quite quickly. So yeah, Saudi Aramco, just an absolute beast of a thing, spits out a ton of cash, and probably the purest play on oil that you're likely to get at scale, I suppose, on any market, really.
Yeah, and I think, you know, some of the pushback on Saudi Aramco has been, you know, it doesn't have a massive free float. You know, how do investors access it? But again, I agree with your points in that they are the OG in the room. You know, they are one of the lowest cost producers internationally. And you know, historically, I've always pushed back. You know, when we discussed gold stocks, I always say, well, buy the commodity, don't buy the mining company, because you don't want that operational margin compression that comes through. And certainly in South Africa, right? But when you look at Aramco, I just think the efficiency of the operation is just really on a level that you haven't seen. You're in Saudi Arabia. I mean, oil's technically cheaper than water. And so that's probably why it makes so much sense looking at Aramco versus the overall Brent oil price. I'm going to jump into my last point here on Broadcom, because I want to bring it back to the chips. We've got the oil sorted. The oil is nice and hot. Let's bring the chips back. How have the chips actually looked? Are we going to get them nice and golden colored, you know? And first and foremost, yes, we looked at the massive dividend that came through to Saudi Aramco. Well, you're not invested in Broadcom for the dividend. It's got a dividend yield of around 1.5% at the moment. And again, that's not exciting. You're not buying these stocks for dividends. You're buying them for growth. So what I've done is I've looked at what is the sector. It's a big sector, right? We mentioned some of the stocks up front, so I'm going to run through all of them. Ghost, if we look at Broadcom, we look at NVIDIA. Now, no surprises there. NVIDIA is the winner, right? NVIDIA is the Saudi Aramco of the chip market, if you want to call it that. NVIDIA is the winner. But we've got Broadcom, we've got Intel, we've got Taiwan Semiconductor. I'll just mention some of the bigger names there. And then we've got AMAT as well, which is Applied Technologies. Of those, who do you think's done the best? Let's exclude NVIDIA. It's obvious it's NVIDIA. Who's done the best over the last year? Let's go with our normal cheat and let you guess at this.
Oh, you know, I never get it right, bro. You know, I hate these guessing things. I mean, is there even a chip manufacturer beyond NVIDIA? No, I'm just kidding. But certainly if you looked at the headlines, you wouldn't think so, right?
Yeah, and in fact, I'm going to give you that one simply because we know NVIDIA wins. So the point's actually just how much NVIDIA's outperformed the next best performer, which happens to be Broadcom. So Broadcom over the last 12 months, like I say to you, it's north of 100%. Call it 112. I'm looking at the chart right now, 112%. If you look at NVIDIA, that's up 288% over the same time period. So that's more than twice the return. That's absolutely stellar. And then the next best performer comes through, and that's AMAT, and they come through around 73%. So quite a big dispersion, just even amongst your top three. And then obviously the laggard here, that's a company called GlobalFoundries, which I think, incidentally, the Saudis are invested in as well. But it's a semiconductor manufacturer in the US and in the Middle East. GlobalFoundries, they're actually the laggard. Over the last 12 months, they're down 16%, which is, it stands, again, maybe something for us to go and have a look at. Why would you be down in the hottest semiconductor market on the planet, certainly over the last year? I don't know, but we can certainly go and have a look at that. Let's look at a longer term. If we look at 5 years, and again, here, no surprises. So I'm going to give it to you. NVIDIA, the winner, over 5 years. The number, hazard a guess at the number, Ghost. Just hazard a guess. What's the percentage gain over 5 years in NVIDIA?
No, it's all the numbers.
It's impossible to get,
it's
right?
It's all the numbers. I'm right? Cheating because I actually just Googled the share price now. So I'm not going to say it to make it sound like I knew this. I mean, it's ridiculous, right? I'm looking at the number on my screen now. Sheesh.
It is. It's almost like your Aramco stock code. Your Aramco stock code was 2222, right? It's up over 2,000%. 2,000% on NVIDIA. I mean, that's just absolutely stellar. The next best performances coming through again from AMAT and from Broadcom, and they're down at around 400%. So I know it sounds ridiculous to say down at 400%. These companies, the sector as a whole, has done so well. NVIDIA has really broken away from the rest of the group. My big caution here, Ghost, is I get so nervous because we saw this in the tech boom. We saw how stocks ran away. They decoupled. There was so much excitement. Yes, the growth is there. Yes, they make lots of money. But what price are you paying for that investment? And that's the point I want to end on here, is that yes, it's been a great sector, but with a company like Broadcom, just looking at the latest results, those were solid, strong results that came through. The market was disappointed because they just couldn't keep that growth flywheel going on the guidance. And maybe they're just being realistic in terms of what their expectations are. That's the risk here, is as soon as you get a slight decouple between what the market has certainly priced in, and that's cloud cuckoo land and unicorns, if you can't deliver that, you're going to come under lots and lots of pressure. So I would be cautious in the sector as a whole. And if you had to ask me between the two, well, you know what? I'm not that bearish on fossil fuels because I think energy is something we can't get away from. Saudi Aramco for the win for me. I would say oil over chips.
I would say oil over NVIDIA at the share price. I don't know about oil over chips, but I could sit. Yeah, I mean, I just can't bring myself to buy a chart that looks like NVIDIA. But then I would have said that, you know, $200 ago. So I have great respect for momentum traders. They are much braver than me because they basically just close their eyes to the fundamentals and just go, well, if it keeps going up, I'm going to ride it. Sometimes I wish that was me. It's like when I go to a game reserve and I get annoyed because I don't see any interesting game for a day. I actually wish I loved birds, you know, because then there's always something to get excited about. So momentum traders are like the birders of the Kruger Park. And, you know, cool for them. But for me, it just feels way too hot. There's no denying, you know, why it's run like this and AI and everything else, but it just feels a little bit silly.
Yeah, indeed. But what do you think as our listeners? That's where we're going to leave it this week. Do you think we should just let it ride, put it all on red or black and ride the momentum? Should we look at fundamentals? What do you think of oil versus chips? Let us know on social media. Hit us up. It's at Magic Markets Pod, one word, at Finance Ghost and at Mohammed Nalla. Or go and find us on LinkedIn. Pop us a note on there. We hope you've enjoyed the show. Until next week, same time, same place. Thanks and cheers.
Ciao.
This podcast is for informational purposes only and is not financial or investment advice. Please speak to your personal financial advisor.